express yourself. You don't never need help from nobody else. All you got to do now, express yourself. Whatever you do, do it good. Whatever you do, 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 Lord, Lord, do it good. All right. It's not what you look like when you're doing what you're doing. It's what you're
all right. Welcome to Express Yourself, where arts, culture, and conversations intersect. I'm your host, Amy Kimberly, and today I'm here with
Stacy Dickerson.
Oh my gosh, what a great afternoon already. I was just jamming away to the KDNK staff show. It feels so good right now, so hopeful. I hope all of you out there are feeling that hope. We have a great show of creatives, a great team of creatives that work on this show every week. And today we're going to hear from a few of them. We got an interview coming up and all sorts of juicy stuff. So do not go away. In fact, what is happening today, Stace?
Well, Amy, today we check in with local singer, songwriter, musician, and producer, the amazing Jackson Emmer.
I love that guy.
Me too. We're going to also listen to a fantastic interview with Alana Rockland from ST9 and hear from local fiber artist Jill Scher about her show Contemporary Fiber Art. So don't touch that dial.
All right, let's get little Jackson Emmer here up from his latest album, and we're going to give Jackson a call. Here you go. This old knife.
This old knife comes along with me. Jingles with the coins in the pocket of my jeans. Knife comes along with me. This old knife been handed down. My great uncle to me when he was still around. Think about him every time I open the blade. This old knife. This old knife cut me once or twice. You're not gonna pay attention, you're sure gonna pay the price. You gave me this lesson and left me this scar. This old knife cut me once or twice. Full and ready, shine.
shining shore. This old knife comes along with me. This old knife comes along with me.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Jackson is not there. All right. We must bring that down. Oh, my gosh. What happened to our technical mastery? Let's try. Hopefully Jackson's going to be calling in here any second into the studio. Oh. That's what happened. Hopefully.
Well, should we try him again?
Yeah, maybe we better try Jackson again because that was a song. Here, just pick up the phone and give him a call while I am talking here. He's calling us. Let's bring Jackson on up. I think that's him right there.
Just pick this up.
No. Hello, Jackson.
Hello.
Hi. Sorry. I think that might have been a technical difficulty on our end. But what a great.
Can you hear?
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
There's just a crazy beeping in my ear.
What is this? Oh, turn off this other.
Yeah.
That's. No, we can really.
There we
hear
go.
You. There. Okay. Mate, there we go. Okay. Yay. Well, it's Friday afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me on.
You bet. Well, listen, one of my favorite quotes about you, Jackson, and there's so many out there because you have racked up accolades across the board, but I love when Rolling Stone says, "Few are writing songs like Jackson Emmer." And you know I am a huge fan, so we're happy to have you here on this Friday afternoon of the KDNK Fun Drive. We're going to give away one of these amazing CDs. But we're talking about April in Your Eyes, a tribute to the songs of John Lilly. And John Lilly he's still alive, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's still alive. He just has, he's got Parkinson's, and he's not really able to tour much or perform because of that and also because of COVID. So I put the tribute together for him. Also because I think more people should be honored while they're alive than, after they're dead. He just
exactly.
is so deserving.
He is. And that's the thing. I mean, I think a lot of people don't know about John Lilly. And it's interesting, when you go to Google him, there's another musician, John Lilly from the Hooters, that comes up. So it does take a while to really understand the scope of what this man has created. How did you jump into a project like this?
Well, when the world kind of fell apart in March of 2020, I was trying to figure out what to do. And I actually still had some work, and I was doing pretty well, doing live streaming and teaching. And a lot of my musician friends were just totally out of a job. So, and I knew that was the case for John, and the Parkinson's didn't help. So I reached out to him to ask about putting together a project to help him out. And I thought it would be kind of like a small thing with like just my friends on it, but it really snowballed into what we have now, which is a lot of incredible artists and like several Grammy winners who just pitched in to support John because they're fans of his music too. So, like I said, it started out as just a hobby and a way to help a friend out. And it grew into this thing that's really been a joy.
Well, it's amazing because you have like Bill Kirchen on it, Kathy Mattea, Tim O'Brien. How did you reach out to everyone? How did you find the, like fans of John Lilly and get the message to them of what you were putting together?
Well, some of them were just friends of mine that I'd crossed paths with playing music over the years, and people who I knew specifically liked John's music or had a connection to him. And then John is friends with a lot of these people too, like Tim O'Brien, Kathy Mattea, Bill Kirchen. Like, he's worked with them or connected with them over the years. And they've been fans of his music, but they hadn't really done, I think, a dedication to his songs, a real focus on it. And part of the gift of the pandemic has been that all these people who would usually be on tour and too busy to do something like this, they had time and they were excited about it. And they had mics at their house, you know, because now everyone has to have that. So we just kind of made it happen because we were all sitting at home.
So you didn't have to. Hi, Jackson, it's Stacy.
Hi, Stacy. Hey, so great to hear your voice.
Yours too. Thank you. So this whole collaboration was done independently, virtually from different studios, and then brought together in one place. Is that how that worked?
Completely remotely.
Wow.
So I would contact an artist and say, hey, do you want to do this? And they said, yes, what's involved? I would say, here's the exact file specifications that I need in terms of recording. Huh. And if you know what that means and you can do that in your, you know, home studio, great. And if you need to find somebody to help you, great. Or if you want me to help you. Like, I was tech support for Bill Kirchen for 2 weeks. He'd call me at 10:30 at night and be like, hey, man, I got this sweet mic, but I think something's wrong and over here, you know, what do you think? And yeah, I mean, it was just so much fun, you know?
That's awesome.
But yeah, it was all done remotely.
You know, Jackson, and I think you'll be able to relate to this. It feels like you have birthed a true child of the COVID time here with this album, because it really reflects this very specific time where people did have to quarantine and create in this way. And, you know, this album seems like it is a very, very inspiring project that you have created. I'm so proud of you. This is fantastic.
Well, thank you for saying that. That means a lot to me, and I feel that way about it too. Like it started as a COVID idea, or an idea in the midst of COVID, and then every step of the process was influenced, and I think made better by the fact that everyone had to change their lives, which meant that they had time for this. They had the technology available in their homes or nearby. And I think because you have to, because they couldn't just pop into a studio and make things the way they had been making, every artist had to get more creative and resourceful. Mm. And I think because of that, every track is just totally from the heart. And that makes the record special.
All right. Well, where can people find this beautiful recording?
JohnLillyMusic.com. It's really for sale on Bandcamp. That's the only place you can get it, is on John Lilly's Bandcamp. And the quickest way to get there is JohnLillyMusic.com. All the sales, the proceeds go directly to John. I don't take any of it. None of the other artists take a cut. We all volunteered. So, the money's really just to help John out, as he lives with Parkinson's. Please, everyone listening, go buy a record or go buy 10, give them to your friend. It will help this incredible songwriter out tremendously.
Well, another way that the songwriter and you are helping out this station is that we have some of these CDs to give away for people who donate to KDNK. So
yeah.
We will be doing that a little later in the show. Please, everybody out there, stay tuned. If you would like yourselves one of these, it's very simple. You just have to call KDNK and become a
new or renewing member.
That's right, at the individual level or above. So give us a call, 963-0139. And also, please go to johnlillymusic.com and show your support. It was quite an undertaking, and thank you, Jackson, for taking it on.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening and for getting the word out.
Thanks, Jackson, and also congratulations. I hear you're going to be a father.
I am, yeah.
So you you're going to birth more than one COVID child this year.
Yes, yeah. Well, it'll be hard to top the human being.
No.
I'm really excited. We're going to have a kid in 2 to 4 weeks.
Woohoo!
You know?
Wow.
It's right around the corner.
That's great.
It's true. And then also we'll get to see Jackson Emmer and his band playing at the 50th annual Carbondale Mountain Fair. So lots happening out there. Thanks for being part of it, Jackson.
Amy, Stacy, thanks for everything you do, and thanks for having me on the show.
All
it's
right.
An honor.
Thanks, Jackson. Take care.
All right. Well, we got some special things happening here in the sauce. So listen in. Here's a little Sound Tribe Sector 9. Sound Tribe Sector 9. And you know, when I hear Sound Tribe Sector 9, or ST9 as those call it, I think of Ali Sanguili and DJ Mama Bird.
Well, that's certainly a compliment.
Welcome. Happy Friday.
You gals, too. It's so fun to see you both in here.
Yay.
Girl power.
Totally.
Oh, Muggsy. Or no, that's not Muggsy. That's Kenna. I thought it was Muggsy. Kenna just brought in a new membership. It's Charles Bailey.
And oh, yay.
Charlie Bailey says, Jackson is an incredible artist. Happy to donate while hearing him. And he is an individual membership. So thank you, Charles Bailey.
And he gets the CD, Charlie Bailey. So hopefully you can come down to KDNK and pick that up.
Yes. Yay. Thank you.
We are lucky to have Allie here because she is really busy because you just opened up a new business in the heart of the Carbondale Creative District, though you were there.
Yeah, so it's like new old. Yeah, we just opened last week and we're rocking and it's been really fun. Yeah.
It's called Batch Provisions.
It's called Batch Provisions. It's still Batch, but we have a new menu and it's been great. Yeah. It's
congratulations.
Been nice. Thank you. It's been nice to see everyone again.
Yeah.
I missed everyone's faces.
That's great.
So, yeah. So come on out.
And you might have also caught the latest Instagram sensation out there with the fashion of food that was photographed at Batch Provisions a couple weeks ago, right before they opened. If you haven't, I suggest you check it out. Yeah. I thought it was pretty hot.
I think it's amazing. And so many amazing community members in that one photo. Mr. Roaring Fork, Mr. Carbondale. You know, we have Maddie Curry. You know, I mean, just
it's
great
awesome.
People.
It's true.
Amazing.
And Dan Giese, I mean, he was just a stand-in, and he stood out. He stood out
in
for
clutch.
Sure.
Yeah, he came in the clutch.
Well, Allie, what do we got coming up? This is very exciting.
Well, it's spring membership drive, so you know, I wanted to do an interview that, you know, was really sort of like kind of a bigger one, more meaningful for me. And so I'm a long time STS9 fan. I've been seeing them since 2002. And I wanted to interview Alana. She's their bassist. She's the only female. And when I started seeing the band, it was an all male group. Alana came in about 7 years ago, and she was in another band with her husband, Sub ID, that I saw before she was in Soundtribe. And when she got into Soundtribe, I was like, this is the most amazing thing ever. So I had a great opportunity to sit down on the phone and chat with Alana, and she really opened up about, you know, everything that's been going on and some exciting stuff for the band. And we talked so much that it's a part one and part two interview. So today is just part one. But yeah, she shares some great things with us, and she went through a tough time last year, regardless of the pandemic, and we'll get into that in part two. But yeah, it's a great female power kind of chat.
Right on.
Awesome. Thank you, Allie.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's
gals.
Hear it. I'm
All
excited.
Right, here we go.
You are tuned into Express Yourself, and this is DJ Mama Bird, and I am thrilled to introduce our guest today, Alana Rocklin, bassist for STS9. Or Soundtribe Sector 9, Tribe Sector 9, however you want to refer. Alana has been a member of the band for about 7 years now, and we are thrilled to have her time right here on KD&K. Hi, Alana.
Hey, Allie. Great to be here.
And thank you so much for being with us here. And while I feel like most of our listeners almost need no introduction from you, let's do have you introduce yourself and tell us how you got into playing music and when did you ultimately make this your career?
Well, let's see. I started playing the bass when I was about 8 years old. My dad gets all the credit for that. He wanted everybody to choose an instrument that year. And I wanted to play the drums, but he said no.
Oh, my God.
So I don't know why I said the bass. I knew someone that was playing the bass at the time, someone I thought was super cool. And so I just said the bass, and I got an electric bass, started learning how to read music and take lessons and stuff.
Wow.
And when I was 10 years old, I moved to Nashville, Tennessee when I was 10 and started playing upright bass. So I've pretty much been, you know, playing music my entire life.
Yeah.
And went to University of Michigan to study music there. And after, you know, while I was in school, I started to really make some money playing music,
mm-hmm.
You know, pay my rent and stuff like that. So just, you know, right as I was kind of graduating college and from there, and I just kind of started trying to make it happen.
Wow. And where did you go to school? You have a degree in music, is that correct?
Yeah, I went to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Go Blue. My big big fan of Michigan. Most fans actually know that.
Yes, yes.
But I went there originally to study classical music. I thought I wanted to be in an orchestra for a living.
Wow.
And it kind of quickly from got there and realized that, no, that's not really my calling, and started studying jazz and ended up getting a degree in jazz and improvisation.
Wow. So that has been a part of your life. And while this seems like so long ago, you joined STS9 in 2014 with your official show in March of that year as their new bassist after the exit of David Murphy. And you had played with STS9 for sit-ins and such many times before, so likely you knew what you were getting yourself into and what their intense family-like fan base was and is like. What was that process like, accepting that position into the band, and how were you feeling about that during sort of a really sensitive transition time for the band and their fans?
Yeah, I mean, we met in 2001, and you know, my husband Brad and I had a group then, and we ended up opening a show for those guys in Chicago, where we were living at the time. And we just became really close friends, like, right about. We just connected. It was just one of those things where
right.
we really fell in love with what they were doing. They really respected what we were doing. And so we just started to kind of form a relationship, friendship. And, you know, from that point in time, we were always connected in some way. We would open shows, or if we were in Nashville, and so whenever they would come to Nashville or Bonnaroo or whatever, we would always hang out, play music for each other, kind of just, you know, had that friendship going. And so on top of that, you know, we were fans of STS9, and so we would see shows. And I think we opened two entire tours where we, you know, opened all the shows for like 6 weeks, right. you know. So there was already like a really great relationship, friendship there. And when they needed a new bass player, it was, you know, some people have auditions, some people, you know, people do it in all kinds of different ways, but sure. this was more of an organic situation where it was like, we were friends, we knew each other. And so me being kind of aware of, not even just aware, but just, it, you know, a part of the fans, you know, I was a fan myself, and I understood, of course, you know, how the fans, how they were feeling during that time. Mm-hmm. I could relate to that. You know, I could totally understand what shoes I was filling, how big of a situation that was. And I also knew the ethos of the band, you know, in a really deep way. So I feel like that was part of the reason why they asked me to do it in the first place, was just because I already had that understanding and could approach it in a really sensitive way.
Sure.
And, you know, I was already, I've been touring, you know, and doing all that for years and years. So that was also part of it, was just sort of just the notion that, that's what I had been doing for other artists. So I think it was just really natural. We tried to make it about the music. You know, I right. came out to play that first show. We hadn't announced that I was going to be there or anything. It was just kind of like, this is, you know, we're going to make this about the music and about what we're playing and what we're doing on stage, and not about like all this other, you know, stuff on the outside.
Right.
So, you know, but it was a big deal, of course, you know, and I fully understood how, you know, how deep that was and that transition was.
Yeah. And, it's really amazing, you know, that this organic thing happened, because it seems like that is sort of like the theme of the band anyways, is this tight family like you know, theme or group that has formed this style of fan base. And STS9, a band that started in 1998 with 11 albums and 2 remix albums and a heavy touring schedule, has hundreds of songs, with many of them being improvs and many that changed their course over time. What was that like, sort of learning all of those songs and songs that have been shelved and songs that are improvised? You know, what is that like for a new member of the band?
Well, that's a great question. You know, as I kind of mentioned, what I had been doing. You know, I would get calls from people and they would say, I might get a call from somebody that said, you know, I need you to learn 30 songs tomorrow, you know, the bus is leaving. So I was already really, I'd been working on that skill for many, many years of just learning songs really fast. So there was that. And then there's also, of course, the fact that I have been around the band and was familiar with the songs. I wouldn't say I was familiar with them in terms of playing them, you know, and I'm not, so there was definitely a lot to learn there, but I was familiar, you know, with right. the aesthetic, with what the songs were, and that was good. But when I, you know, when I got the call to join the band, as I said, I was living in Nashville at the time. So I said, you know, let me take a couple weeks. Like, give me your top 50 songs. Give me the top 50 songs that you guys play, and I'll start there. And so I learned, you know, 50 songs to start. And that's when I, when we first played together the very first time, you know, rehearsing, that's what I came in with.
Wow.
So that felt really good because I had that sort of basis. And then it was just about adding songs from there. And so, you know, that first summer we played mostly festivals, and there was generally every show maybe one song that was new to me.
Okay.
One or two. So with that 50 as my basis, that's where I started. And we would just kind of keep adding them and keep adding them. Now, there were songs that I loved that they didn't play anymore, so I would kind of bring those up. You know, like, hey, what about this song? What about that song? And sometimes they would just be like, oh, man, we forgot about that song.
Right.
Yeah, like, we should play it, you know, because there are so many. And it's hard to kind of keep track of maybe what the fans are into or what songs slip away. And so it was a really – I felt like it went really smooth for me because I had that 50 to start out with. And I think by the time we got through, like, that fall tour of 2014, we were way over 100 songs at that point.
Amazing.
Built up. But everybody was really gracious and helped me learn them and, you know, went over them as much as I needed. And but I also really – I approached it kind of like how I approached, you know, learning a jazz standard, where you kind of, you listen to the first recorded work. You know, you might listen to what people, what fans think are the definitive version of that song, what the newest version of that song is. And so I really studied that, you know, I took pride in that. That song, like Moonsocket, you know, through the years, it evolves and changes, mm-hmm. you know. So I wanted to make sure that I was, like, kind of coming in with understanding of all the years, like, all the versions. And I think that also helped kind of give the authenticity to what I was doing and how I could, you know, make the songs feel like, you know, like they were meant to be. So,
right. Well, I thank you for unshelving songs because, you know, we always have, you know, those songs that we've been chasing for so many years, and it's just really amazing to hear them change over the course of time. Do you have a favorite song, or is there a song that's been one of your biggest challenges to play or to learn?
Oh, man, that's a good question. People ask me all the time, and Reemergence has, like, always been one of my favorite songs. Mm-hmm. Like, before I joined the band, that was kind of like my song. Like, if I was at a show and they played that, So that I love that song, and I love playing that song. And I would say the hardest song to learn was definitely Tap In, because I'm not, Murph and I would always joke with him about that song. Like, yeah, I'm not going to learn that song. I don't even know how to tap. Like, tapping was just not something I was, like, wanting to get into or
sure.
do or anything. So when that kind of came up, you know, I had to do a little extra work on that one. But other than that, you know, it was, It felt pretty seamless as these things go. You know, mm-hmm. it's hard to learn that many songs. It's hard to keep them all organized in your mind. And of course, like, you know, my goal was also that I didn't want to have any music or anything in front of me. You know, I wanted to know them all, you know, in my heart. So,
you
know, I think it all went super smooth, all things considered, but I did put a lot of work into it ahead of time, and so I think that really helped.
Now, I have a question that's sort of off the roster, but the energy at an STS9 show, if you've ever been to one, is really kind of an indescribable feeling, and that's something that you all are sort of orchestrating when you're on the stage. If you do look out at the crowd at a certain point, and it's obvious you can feel what they're feeling, does that sort of change the way you play, or does that take a new direction on stage? I mean, what is that like?
Oh, man, it's totally indescribable how that feels, you know, when you're in that moment. But there is this synergy that happens, and it's definitely something that we're trying to cultivate.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something you can force, right? It's a very it has to be genuine, right?
You have to feel it.
It has to kind of happen. So I think that, you know, there's a certain amount of, like, you know, we have to be kind of tapped into each other.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be in the right frame of mind, you know, with each other in order to send that out to the audience, but they always give it back. And there's definitely a lot of times where, like, maybe for whatever reason, we're not in that zone or tapped into that as we want to be. Sometimes what we do as the opposite is just use the energy of the crowd to get us there.
Okay.
So it really is like a, it's so cool.
Yeah.
How that happens. And it does feel like it's both sides. You know, it feels that way to us just probably as much as it might feel on the other side.
Right.
That is what we're always trying to get to. You know, that's the elusive thing that, you know, you're trying to tap into every time, you know. And
yeah.
So
quite euphoric.
It feels really incredible.
Well, before you joined the band, you had your own band with your husband, Brad, called Sub ID, which I've actually seen Sub ID many times. And I remember during a 5-night run over New Year's in Atlanta at the Tabernacle. Sub ID was also the first band to put out an album with STS9's label 1320 Records. Do you and Brad still find time to play together?
Definitely, yes. Brad is our engineer for STS9 and studio. He does all of our studio stuff, and he does all of the band camp recordings and all that he's in charge of. But we, as a unit, still play all the time. We're actually right now, we, you know, during this pandemic, it's always been our thing to want to do some streaming. And so we're finally now in a place where we can do that. And we're going to be doing that really soon, start, you know, doing shows of our own from our house and broadcasting them. So we're really excited about that. We just came out with a remix of is the Sub ID remix that we did of Peace Blaster, but we had everybody in STS9 also play on it. That just came out. So we're always working on things. But you should look for that because we're going to be doing a bunch of streaming and a bunch of shows like from our house, and we're super stoked about that.
Wow, so. We will be excited about that. Well, I want to talk about what it's like to be the only female in an all-male band. And as someone that may be biased, I can, however, say that anyone who has seen you play live in person has witnessed your immense, fierce talent and true dedication to the art form of playing music. But do you feel like your role in the band takes on a different aspect, being the only female? Do you feel more pressure? It seems so inspiring to any young female trying to get into the world of playing music. Is that something that you think about?
Well, you know, I really owe a lot of that fierceness and kind of just, you know, ability to do that to my parents, because I never knew that it was something I should even consider, like being a female playing the bass, or it wasn't something, you know, as I started playing it when I was 8 years old, that anyone ever clued me into that I should be thinking is strange. So I, as a child, like, never thought anything of that. So I play the bass. That's what I do. That's what I love to do. And, you know, it wasn't until I got older that started to kind of creep in, where, you know, I remember a couple times playing in college, like playing master classes for, you know, really well-known musicians, and them kind of,
sure.
You know, me thinking I was going to get some kind of musical feedback, but what I got was like, you know, you're not going to be able to do this for a career. You know, you're a female. Mm-hmm. That whole thing is kind of interesting because I've always had people around me that support what I do. My husband, 100%. Like, we've known each other since we were 19 or 20.
Wow.
And so, yeah, he's always, that's never been a thing for him. Like, it was never anything I clued into until I got older and tried to have more of a career of it, and then it became like a something that I had to kind of pay attention to. In STS9, you know, it was always something that, you know, the other four members, I think, thought of as a positive, you know, to have female energy, to have that perspective. And so that always felt really encouraged, you know, and like, you know, we want that. The logistics of being a female on the road, yeah, you definitely have to deal with some stuff that maybe, you know, is unique to that situation.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, the only female on a bus, you know, living with other guys. And obviously, STS9 was the first of that scenario for me. Most of the time that, you know, I've played music on the road, it's been with guys. You know, I think I can think of one time that I toured with an all-female group. And other than that, you know, I'm usually the only one. Now, I think that most of the time that I've been in those situations, it's because people want me there. You definitely will encounter people that will, you know, discourage it, you know, and I definitely encounter that. The other thing that I always, you know, that still cracks me up, and I'm sure every female musician can attest to it, is that, like, you'll be the one that can't get into your own show, or, you know, like, you're walking up to a festival stage, and, like, the four guys in front of me were walking, and they'll stop me, like, hey, what are you doing? Like,
wow. You know, like,
wow. So that happens. It still happens. It still is, like, you know, crack me up, or I'll be standing. I used to tour with Jeff Coffin, and he's a saxophonist for Bela Fleck and then Dave Matthews now. But there was a really funny time. I was on the road with him, and I guess I didn't have my pass on me. I, like, walked out of the club, didn't have my pass, and I was trying to get back in, and the show was about to start, and I could not. They wouldn't let me in. They mm-hmm. thought I was, like, lying. You know, I'm like, no, I swear to God, like, I got to get in there. You got to, you know, and I'm calling. And, of course, everybody's on stage. They're ready to play, so no one's paying attention to their phone. And, yeah, so those things still
wow.
happen. And,
that's an amazing
you
story.
Know, but you know, I feel really supported in what I do, and I think that's really just a testament to the people that I have surrounding me, and, you know, I'm thankful for that.
Wow.
All right. Wow. Thank you so much, Mama Bird, for that. The first half of a fantastic interview with Alana from STS9. Hey, we had a couple of people call in. Honey Brinson, it just joined at the pet membership. And our gal over there, Sarah Overbeck, loves STS9 on KDNK. And she says, way to go, DJ Mama Bird. And on top of that, we have now topped $51,242 in our spring membership drive. Oh my God, we're killing it.
That's right, you guys. And coming up, there's going to be more music. You know, this is just going to continue this Friday afternoon party. So please do call 0139. I had a senior moment there.
Yeah.
It's because we had these yummy margarita jello shots.
From Batch Provisions.
They're really quite yummy. Okay, you guys, let's get right into it, because we have coming up an interview. And Stacey, tell us about this.
Well, this is going to be a great interview with Jill Scher. She's the curator of the concurrent exhibition at the R2 Gallery in the Launchpad. And this is a contemporary fiber art exhibit called Crossing Thresholds. And it's innovative work by award-winning fiber artists exploring the intersection of art, nature, spirit, science, and the social and political environment, while pushing the traditional boundaries and application of fiber art. It features regional and local artists, including Wendy Koyinya, Andrea Love, Sally Maver, Liz Sargent, Jan Schubert, and of course, Jill Scher, the curator. So here's a nice conversation with Jill Scher and Brian Colley. Thank you.
My name is Brian Colley. I am the gallery manager at the R2 Gallery at Carbondale Arts. And I am joined here with local fiber artist, Jill Scher. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Thanks for joining me. You are the curator for a show that's up at Carbondale Arts right now called Contemporary Fiber Art Crossing Thresholds, which is up through April 29th. And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the show.
Sure. So I originally had the concept for the show a couple of years ago, and it grew out of this feeling that in the general population, there wasn't a lot of familiarity with fiber art beyond, quilt making or knitting or that kind of thing. So part of my impulse was as a educational effort. And then the other aspect was that there is so much going on in fiber art in like a wide range of mediums and techniques. And I wanted to bring kind of a broad spectrum into the show. And so that was what I was attempting to do.
Yeah. There's a lot of innovative work by, you say, award-winning fiber artists exploring the intersection of art, nature, spirit, science, and the social and political environment. Can you tell us a little bit about the artists you selected for this exhibition?
Sure. So I first went with people I knew personally. There's a weaver from Steamboat Springs named Wendy Kalinia. She does really interesting work where she weaves flat planes, or that's what she's exploring right now, at least. It's not what she's done in the past. She weaves flat planes and then uses them to form sculptural pieces. And they're really beautiful and kind of mysterious, too.
Mm-hmm.
So she's one of the artists, and she's representing weaving, really. And then Jan Schubert, who also happens to be my twin sister,
mm-hmm.
is in the show. And she is doing needle-felted images that are illustrations for a children's book that she's in the process of putting together. And this story that she's making, the idea came to her at the retreat center at the St. Benedict's Monastery when she was serving a retreat there. And so all the images come from the animals that live in that valley and the monastic grounds.
Okay.
She is representing one form of needle felting. And then Andrea Love is a filmmaker from Port Townsend, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And she does needle felting as well, but she's using it in stop motion animation. So she's a filmmaker. So she does films just with stop motion and needle felted figures and objects.
I've been watching some of her works through her Instagram page, and there's so much detail that she puts into it. It's mesmerizing.
Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting for people to see her little vignettes and mm-hmm. and even some longer length pieces as well that she does.
Mm-hmm.
She's starting to gain a pretty wide audience with her work. The other artist who will have a film of her work is Sally Maver, and she is from the Northeast. She also does book illustrations. Some of her work has been political, but the film that we're showing during this show is called Making My Bed, and it's an 8-minute film that has to do with a book that was just published in September that she did all the illustrations for. They're really detailed mm-hmm. base relief stitching. The illustrations took her 2 years to do.
Wow.
For this book. Each illustration took about 2 months.
Yeah.
And the detail is just beautiful.
Yeah, it's astounding watching her go through each character, and not only the characters, but each panel, because each panel has, you know, at least one scene, if not a background, and then the pictures or details of animals and things. It's she really took her time, but it really shows. So,
mm-hmm. That book is called My Bed, and it's multicultural. The pages illustrate how children sleep all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes you into the culture of all of these different places and what their houses are like, what their beds are like. It's very apt for this time, kind of a multicultural understanding little mm-hmm. tool.
Yeah, it's great.
That's really interesting. So there's another artist named Liz Sargent, and she's an old friend. We were textile designers together in North Carolina when we lived there.
Okay.
But she right now is a fibers instructor at Savannah College of Art and Design, so she's been there for, I don't know, maybe 10 years now. And the work that she is bringing, these little tiny kind of freeform sculptures that where she lives, she's on the Atlantic Ocean, and there's palmetto plants that grow there, and she gathers the for these particular sculptures, she's gathered the grasses and processed them in their little needle-woven sculptures.
Wow.
And also I think she's sending a couple of paintings as well. And then I'm the final artist for this show, and right now I'm primarily a felter for the last 15 years, and these are all felted pieces. I was focusing on large-scale vessels. I've done vessels for quite a while, but I was trying to push the boundary of how large can I do one.
So that's what these are. What's the largest you have in this show then?
Well, the tallest one is, I think, maybe 44 inches.
Wow.
And it's maybe 18 inches wide and deep.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, you know, it's the felting of the wool, the strength of the felting that keeps the form solid and strong. And with these really tall ones, some of them I added more support. It depended on the shape, really.
Sure. And you've also got, I think most of those are probably pedestal pieces, but then there's a few, well, several pieces that hang from the ceiling.
Yes, I've been playing with these light forms that are, I'm calling them light tubes,
mm-hmm.
where they have LED lighting inside that they're meant to be, well, maybe you could call them a lighting source, but they're more sculptural than than lighting. They're pretty decorative, and I was thinking originally of kind of C forms for them, but there's a variety in them.
Mm-hmm.
So those will be hung and lit for the show.
Wow. It'll be so exciting to have this mix of fiber artists. We haven't had a fiber show in I'm not sure how long. Could you tell us, you know, there's so many different kinds of fiber art out there, but I guess the felted wool, can you describe that in more detail and maybe some of the other forms in this show?
Well, the felting that I do, it's all wet felted.
Hmm.
So either you have to layer it enough layers for it to have substance and strength in order to hold form. So these, at least the large ones that I am doing, are generally around 7 layers deep. And once you layer it, you get it wet and soapy, and the felting comes just from moisture, agitation, and warmth helps as well. That's a process that can take a long time. A couple of vessels, well, I mean, all of these vessels have taken a long time, but the ones that are done on round forms, I use my hands, once it's entirely layered, just use my hands rubbing to get it to the fibers to start to crinkle together and tighten up and become a solid fabric rather than tens of thousands or millions of individual fibers.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's the process with wet felting. And a lot of people, when you say felting, people are more familiar with needle felting, where you can do sculptural forms with a little barbed needle that actually creates the entanglement process between all of the fibers. And the needle felting is what Andrea Love used for her figures in her film, and also what Jan used for her illustrations.
Okay.
And you can do very detailed things with needles.
Yeah.
People use them a lot for little dolls. And then, of course, the weaving that Wendy does is on a loom.
Okay, I was going to ask that.
Yeah, so her weaving is done on a loom, and then after it comes off the loom, the forms are created. Let's see. Sally's work is all just hand sewing and stitching.
Mm-hmm.
All of it is very intricate work that takes a really long time.
Yeah.
And then Liz's work is also needle weaving. She's using a needle to weave.
Gosh.
Of course, that isn't the whole gamut that you can do in fiber work, but that's what we happen to have represented in this show.
I'm excited for people to get to come check out the intricate details that are going on in this show. It's going to be fun to watch people's faces when they come and get their minds blown.
I'm really excited about it myself. It'll be really, really fun to see it in person.
Yeah.
For sure.
And to see behind the scenes in some of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I think both Sally's more behind the scenes because you can see her in her studio making some of the panels for the book. And then mm-hmm. I think Andrea's got a few scenes where you can see her hand working in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow. Thank you so much for curating such a dynamic show. I hope for all the fiber fans in the Valley, they'll take some time to come visit.
Yes, I'm really hoping that too. And I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to do it too. I'm really happy that it was able to work out. So
yeah. Anything else you want to add?
I would just say to people, if you have the opportunity to come and see the show, then please do. I think that you'll be interested in what's there.
And the gallery will be open every weekday from 10 to 5, and we will allow up to 10 masked visitors at a time. And you can also see the show online. We'll have a virtual tour that you can check out, and everything that is for sale will be on an online shop as well. So if you can come in person, we'll have a safe space for you. And thank you, Jill.
Sure. Thank you.
Do I push?
Yeah. All right. Thank you. That was fabulous. And that show runs through April. You guys, if you have any kids, they just get so inspired watching the stop motion little films that are running continually in the gallery. And that gives the adults a chance to really take in the show. So it's a great family show as well.
Yeah, it's great. It's beautiful. It's elegant. It's really, really wonderful. Please come and see it.
All right, you guys, you are tuned in to KDNK. You've been listening to Express Yourself. I'm Amy Kimberly, and I'm here with Stacy Dickerson. She's very busy. No, Stacy, we don't have to worry about that today, I guess. The word is temperature is rising here. There is lots of action going on around here.
It's
apparently
hot.
Oh, my God, it's hot. I can hear Steve Cole and the woo, smooth, smooth tones of him playing that saxophone.
Mm.
Yeah, I hear people talking.
Yeah.
I saw Muggsy Faye come in. Lots is going to be happening because it is the KDNK Spring Membership Drive. And we have Kenna here with us, the queen behind all this. It's going so well, Kenna.
You're doing a fabulous job. It's a savage time, man.
Yeah, it's been really great. Thank you, everybody.
Oops, wait, I didn't have you up. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Try it again.
Thank you, everyone. Yeah, it's been really great.